Welcome back to the podcast. Gabe, Giannis, and I, we are joined with an awesome guest today. I was fired up for this one for a long time, but I don't know, man. It did not disappoint, right, Gabe?
I was pumped as soon as we put this one on the calendar. Matt Chan is just one of those guys that, like, you know, I remember being a fan of back in the day, been a fan of following him, you know, for a while now. So I was looking forward to this conversation.
Multiple time games competitor, firefighter, outdoorsman, husband, just a lot to unpack in today's episode. We dive deep into his relationship with Sheree, outdoors, and a variety of other things.
Yeah, man. I mean, sometimes the episodes that go in a completely different direction than where I thought it was going to go end up being my favorites. And this was one of those episodes. You know, Matt Chan, you would think we would go down the CrossFit fitness route, but ended up talking about a whole bunch of interesting things. Like you said, his relationship, fitness and firefighting, what he's up to. I didn't know that he was a firefighter, left for 5 years and then went back into it. So that was a really cool story. But yeah, man, a lot of good things. So hope you guys enjoy it. I know you guys will enjoy it, but let's get into it.
Let's go. Look at this guy. I love your background. What? I don't know. Where did you find that plant behind you? What is that? Are you in your house?
Yeah. Sheree and I have had this plant in our house now for like 15 years. It started off like maybe that tall. Yeah. And we've tried to kill it for basically 13 of the 15 years, but we decided... We decided to start watering it, and it turns out when you water plants, they grow. So
that's the first key takeaway of the podcast. When you water plants, they grow.
Oh man, that's a powerful
like one. A relationship. Well,
Matt, dude, you know, in the intro, we talked a little bit more about you and everything you have going on. But I think a good place to start, man, is like, dude, I'm super interested. When I first met you, this is years and years ago, the first time I actually ever heard of you, I think I told you this. It was at the 2009 CrossFit, or 2008. Were you at 2008? Yes. Yes, in the burpee deadlift workout. That's right.
Yep.
Dude, first time I heard of Matt Chan is they announced the burpee deadlift workout, which, by the way, if people look back at that now, there was some sketchy range of motion.
Yeah.
And I just remember like the best score, Matt Chan. I'm like looking around. I'm like, who the hell is Matt Chan? What's he put up the best score? But that was the first time I heard of you. And then from there, obviously we both competed. We became friends. And at the time you were in the fire service. So in 2008, you were in the fire service. Then you pivoted and worked for CrossFit. And then you went back. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So 2012, I left the department that I work for now. And I asked for a leave of absence. I had only planned on giving the CrossFit Games for one more year, a big shot, throw everything at it. But at the time, they didn't have the staffing levels to support that. So I ended up leaving the department and pursuing the goal of CrossFit Games. And then I ended up getting rehired 5 years later after taking a long hiatus.
Dude. So yeah. What I think is so powerful about that story, I just wanted to kind of open it up with this, is that the other day I was talking to Juliette Starrett, you know her, and not the other day, it was like years ago. And she goes, you know, when I was debating about opening up a gym, because at the time she was a lawyer making good money and she had wanted to pursue opening up a gym. And one of her like, you know, mentors was like, hey, look, if you leave your current role as a lawyer making whatever money and you go open a gym for a year and it sucks, you could still come back and still work 20 more years in this industry. And so I think sometimes we forget that like, it's okay to go do something different and still come back. I mean, look at you, you were in the fire, you left for 5 years and now you still have a fulfilling career for another X amount of years. And I just think you're a good testament to like, you could pivot out and pivot back and there's nothing wrong with that. Actually, it's probably a good thing in some ways.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there are downsides to what I did. For example, like I didn't contribute a lot to my retirement funds during those 5 years. So I think people need to take a good hard look at that stuff. I, at the time, had very few responsibilities. It was just Sheree and I, and we had a small house that was easy to pay for. But all in all, I look back at that opportunity to walk away from the fire service for 5 years as an incredible opportunity for growth. And I got to pursue something that gave me a ton of satisfaction. And I know you're still experiencing that satisfaction. So I don't look back on those 5 years as lost opportunity within the fire service or my retirement. I look at it as something that really contributed to my success in the fire department, because now I'm a subject matter expert in an area where it's definitely needed. And there's a lot of upward growth there for me professionally as a firefighter because of what I did with CrossFit and in the strength and conditioning kind of arena. So it really paid off in the long run. It is scary though, because you're walking away from something that's very secure, that's providing, you know, a salary, benefits, retirement, and you're trying something that won't necessarily provide that. I look back at it as really something that I'm happy I did. It was scary for sure, but now, like, we're experiencing kind of the benefit of doing it.
Yeah, because and then I want Gabe to talk on this, but like, when you came back, now you're really taking a lead in terms of like the fitness for firefighters too, right? That's a piece of what you're doing, is you're leading the charge on that front. I mean, what are you seeing in that particular realm? Because I imagine one of the things that we've talked about, Gabe and I have talked about this a little bit, I do work with different law enforcement groups and different groups. I think the culture at firehouses, it seems like the culture is like, we need to be fit and capable to do our job, but maybe I'm mistaken. I'm sure it could always get better, but what are you seeing and how are you working on that front?
Well, I can only speak for what I see in this kind of mountain region where I go to a lot of fire conferences and where I also participate in fire academies. I'd say that we take health, wellness, fitness very seriously. And it's because our call volume is going up. You know, every 5 years, we're going up 5 to 10%. So the job is not getting easier. It's getting significantly harder. And in order to get through the majority of a career, so most firefighters aim to work between 20 and 30 years. Previously, you know, when call volume was very low, 30 years in the fire service was easy. It was fairly easy because you're going only on like 3 to 5 calls per day and you get a full night's sleep at nights. It is not the case now. When I go to work, generally you're running pretty much all day. So you'll run 5 to 8 calls during the day, and then you'll run anywhere from 2 to 5 calls at night. So you're basically up all night for 2 days straight. And in order to get through that, you have to take care of yourself, number one. And that can look like, you know, saunas, ice baths, stretching and all that, and obviously sleep. But also people are taking the nutrition side of things and the exercise side of things very seriously. I'm contributing with, you know, as much knowledge as possible to my small fire department and at fire conferences. But also we try to set up our fire academies with as much knowledge as possible. And that's not just about fitness and nutrition. That's also about like mental and emotional resiliency. So Sheree does a talk at every one of our fire academies where she talks about relationships and what to expect. So we try to arm them with as much information as possible so that they are front loaded with what to expect on the tail end of their careers. Cause it's like us, you know, working out at, you know, 20-year-old Jason and 20-year-old Matt, like we could take care of business and not have to worry about the consequences. But now that we're older, like all that stuff has kind of caught up to us, and it's probably really shortened our athletic lifespan potentially because of, you know, for me, I have knee and back problems now because of the damage I did early on.
I have a whole bunch of questions, but the first question I had, and I just wanted to go back 1 second. What were the 5 years again that you took your hiatus?
2012 to 2017.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you were still in the fire department for, you know, because I'm looking at your CrossFit Games profile, 2010, fourth place, 2011, 10th place. So you were doing both at the time.
I was, yeah. And that's why in my head, I was starting to think like, all right, the sleep is affecting my performance. The 3 days out of the week that I'm locked in at the firehouse is affecting my performance. And when I finished the 2011 games, I really felt like I had left a lot on the table. And I think I took somewhere in the top 10. I don't remember, but
I have it pulled up. 10th in 2011. And then, so then did you take the year off to then get second in 2012?
Yeah, that's right. And that's what the goal was to be on the podium for 2012. And just by taking that time off, it happened. And I definitely trained differently because I could. But really what it comes down to is when you have a singular focus, you know, you can really perform better.
dude. I love the story of you taking that chance, accomplishing what the goal was, which was to get on the podium, and then still being able to go back. I think that so many people, it's so easy to find all the reasons not to do the thing. You know, like retirement, safe paycheck, like, hey, this is a career. Like, it would have been so easy to have been like, I got to stick to this because the other thing is such a big chance. But man, I mean, if more people could hear the fact that like, it's always going to be there for you, you know, you can move away from home. You can, you know, try the job, like switch careers. Like, is it going to be ideal to like go back to it? Will you have lost a little bit of time? Sure. But you can always go back to it. I think that that's such an important piece that I think more people need to hear.
Yeah, especially if you're set up for that, right? If you have not a lot of responsibilities and you can really explore something, like Sheree for years has talked about, you know, taking a year hiatus again. And I mean, this has been happening since 2003, we started having this conversation and just exploring outdoor stuff. And the closest we ever came to that was in 2013. We lived in an Airstream trailer.
Yeah, you did.
Traveling the Western US and really trying to experience as much outdoor activity as possible. But at the time, we had also taken on a lot of CrossFit seminar staff work that kind of sidetracked what we were doing in the outdoors. But the one thing I think is important to mention about those 5 years off is, you know, if you're doing this to chase a dream that involves like athletic potential or something like that, it needs to be a realistic goal, because I had taken a bunch of years and committed it to the CrossFit Games while as a firefighter and seeing my performance. So I kind of knew, all right, look, I've been top 10 since we started this thing. I know that if I take this time off, I'm going to perform better. Who knows? I might even stand on the podium or even win the CrossFit Games. As long as people keep that in mind as they're making those decisions, like where am I truly at in this? Is this going to be worthwhile? I would not throw it away. I would not throw away a career unless those variables were in place. But if you're looking at doing something that's like, hey, you know what? I've always dreamt of X, you know, whether it's to go do something like, you know, whatever, get really good at rock climbing and explore the US climbing rocks all over the place. That's a different story. If that's a dream, most companies, most fire departments will give you a leave of absence and save your place for you. And that's something that I think a lot of people should take advantage of.
Dude, I love the fact that you drove, or that you went across the country in the RV with Sheree. It makes me so excited because I almost lived vicariously through you and through Gabe. So Gabe has also Airstreamed across the country. Both of you guys, you know, because like my life, you know, looking back on it, like in college, I should have done like some study abroad or something, but I found the gym, I found a career, and Ashley and I were just kind of like here, and we haven't done anything like that before. Maybe when we get older and our kids get older, maybe we'll do it. But I love the fact that both of you guys Airstreamed it. And I could only imagine what that does for your relationships. And because you're in such a confined location for so long. And if I'm not mistaken, Matt, like you guys would go, you would Airstream and work seminars like across the country. Wasn't that the way it was working for you guys?
Yeah, dude, that was not ideal, because how that would work was, so CrossFit would book us at different seminars across the country or around the world. And we would have to select where we're flying out of about a month ahead of time, sometimes 6 weeks. So even if we weren't like, we're not good planners. So like, for example, I think we were in like Portland or something like that, Bend, Oregon. And they asked us where we're going to be 4 weeks from now. And we're like, oh, shoot, I guess Vancouver. And we were enjoying Bend so much that we ended up staying till like the day before. And we had to rush up to Vancouver in order to fly out of Vancouver for this seminar. So we didn't plan it real well, but it was a lot of fun.
Man, a lot of logistics. We enjoyed our year, but we didn't really have to be anywhere specific at any given time. So that flexibility was nice. Going back to the firefighter thing, has there been any drop in just the like recruiting pool that you guys have because of fitness? Because I know that that's a big problem in law enforcement, but what does that look like in just like the bodies that you're getting that even want to be firefighters or can?
Yeah, so it's difficult. I will say this from experience. I've been on the hiring panel for two different years, and you cannot judge a book by its cover. I will say that because This last year, we had a great group. We started with like 600 applicants for 9 positions.
And oh, wow.
And we had to whittle them down. And of course, you're taking into consideration what they're saying, but you're also like how they conduct themselves. Are they sitting up straight? Are they relaxed? You know, all these different things. Because it starts with just a video conversation like we're doing now. And then as you whittle them down, you get in-person interviews. And we don't ask questions about fitness. And the tough part is, as we are interviewing somebody, we can't stray from the interviews, because it's got to be the same circumstances across the board, so everybody is treated the same in the interview. And I will say that most of these people that make it to the in-person interviews, looking at them, you would think, okay, we're on the same playing field. Everybody's starting with a similar physical background. But then when you see them get to the academy and they start doing the PT, or they start doing fire ground work, you know, drills, you start to see different fitness capacities kind of separate. So people who have worked on their fitness for a lifetime, they're way up here. People who have just started going to the gym and maybe lost a bunch of weight and are starting to get fit, they're way down here. But during those academies, you start to see the difference. So we have constant openings. We've been doing 2 fire academies per year. Generally, we do it in a conglomeration, and it's between 30 and 50 firefighters twice a year, which is nuts. And we're having a tough time filling those positions. And really, we're fighting for those same applicants, because generally the requirements are pretty low to get into a fire academy. But we still are looking for people who, you know, have integrity, really are team oriented, family oriented, so on and so on. So we're looking for all these different kind of traits. And if they don't have it, we don't consider them. So that pool, even though we started at 600, is more like 50.
Oh,
yeah. So like the pool gets smaller and smaller.
So are you not able to ask questions about their fitness background in the interview? Like, is that just something that like isn't a part of those interview questions? Or
I'll give you an example. So one of the questions that all fire departments generally ask is, Gabe, tell us what you've done to prepare for your role as firefighter at North Metro Fire Rescue District. And now, if you don't build fitness into your answer, we can't assume that you've worked on your fitness.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
You can't ask follow-up questions. Be like, okay, well, that's great that you got your bachelor's degree and that you got your paramedic certificate, but what about your fitness? Have you worked on your fitness at all? We can't do that.
So when they actually show up to the academy, like, would you say that over the years of being the fire service, have you seen the average participant or average cadet, their fitness decrease or increase? Is it decreasing year over year, would you say, or is it about the same?
All right. So I'm going to say something that it's crappy. I think if you look at the firefighters' conditioning as a whole, we're on the right path. They're coming in fitter than they were previously. Unfortunately, one of the things that's prioritized, it's not unfortunate, but one of the things that is prioritized in most fire departments is a paramedic certificate, so that we can provide advanced life support on every call that we go on, which is over 70% medical calls. So because of that, what you get is people who have had to commit themselves to a paramedic certificate for at least 6 months, most of them up to a year. And that requires ride-alongs, incredible amounts of studying, 5 days a week of sitting in class. So these guys are kicking their own asses to get this paramedic certificate and then get a job in the fire service. And what happens is they've been sitting on their ass for almost 12 months, and they may have had fitness at some point, but it's dropped off considerably while they've gotten that certificate. So when we try to hire paramedics, generally that's where we run into problems with the candidates that we get.
I just had a question on, like, when you talked about Cherie, who's your wife, who speaks to at the academy. And I think like hitting it from the front just makes so much sense to me. You know, we've been talking to the NYPD about a lot of that kind of stuff and others, because if you can get it early and you set the tone, then you could build from there, I think. But you talked about this idea of like having a spouse, having a family, being a firefighter. What types of things from a mindset perspective, or I guess that's what we're talking about. What is she talking about? And what have you seen like as like breakthroughs within that group? You know, like, what are you guys really talking about? Cause you guys have a hard job. Like bottom line, you have a tough job.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that she does really well is she talks about expectations. And we all have expectations in our relationships, whether they're voiced and communicated to our spouse or not. And that causes conflict. So for example, you know, I'm just going to make up one. So let's just say I have an expectation of, rather than putting the dishes into the sink, that you just put them into the dishwasher. I don't even care if they're dirty, just throw them in the dishwasher. But until I communicate that to my significant other, I'm always going to be let down. Does that make sense? Like if I don't say, Sheree, I'd love it if you put the dishes in the dishwasher instead of in the sink. And I just kind of internally get upset about that because she's not fulfilling my expectation, then it's going to cause problems. But when you're being put into the fire service, there are so many variables that are brand new. And those are difficult for a spouse to understand because it is not part of their world. It's a very different lifestyle and career path. For example, one of the things that Sheree and I really had to come to terms with, and it's been 10 years and basically I was 10 years into the fire service before we really identified it, was I never get time to myself. Okay. So, and Jason, I think you're probably in similar situation where when I go to the fire service, or sorry, fire department, I am with people 24 hours a day, 48 hours at a time. And whether that's with patients or, you know, let's say administrative staff or just the guys that I'm working with, I'm always there and I'm always on and I'm trying to operate at a high level. So, you know, let's just say that's in the path of, you know, I'm working towards my becoming a lieutenant. So I'm trying to do the things that set me up for that. And I'm on the whole time. Then I have to come home and I have other responsibilities. But immediately as I come home, Sheree wants my attention because I haven't seen her for 48 hours. But at that time, I'm burned out and I haven't had any sleep for 48 hours, or minimal sleep anyway. And she would always be disappointed in my conduct around her during those first few hours of being home. So really we've kind of adopted this concept of basically just giving some time to decompress, let the stress levels come back to baseline. And now that we've communicated that, man, we have such a better relationship during that first day off. She doesn't expect me to get to work. She doesn't expect me to fix all the problems that happened while I was gone. She gives me that time and allows me some breathing time to kind of get back to normal. She talks about a bunch of stuff like that. It's really, it's pretty unbelievable. And, you know, she talks about like what we see and the stress involved with that. And, you know, how a spouse can't really understand kind of the weight that a lot of emergency services personnel are carrying on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, that stuff, it's weird. It doesn't feel like it affects you until you talk about it. And then it becomes like I become very emotional. Like I can hold all that stuff in there and never think about it and feel pretty good about everything. But the minute, you know, I talk to Sheree or talk to a therapist about it, it's like, oh shit, why am I about to cry? Like this is, I didn't feel this coming along.
Yeah.
Man, I love that advice because, excuse me, I think it applies to obviously so many other areas. There was a quote that I remembered, I was able to find it. Unspoken expectations are premeditated resentments.
Yeah.
It's so true, man. Like you can't expect your wife, spouse, partner to read your mind and know that this thing bothers you or that you expect this thing. And I think that it's not only communicating those things, but I think that, you know, one of the things that I've tried to be better at is also constantly checking in about like, okay, what does Ariel, my wife, need? you know, yeah. what does she need now that, you know, we had our first kid and things are a little busy and I'm busy doing this stuff over here. Like, because also like, I might think that I'm helping by doing A, but she might not need me to do A. She actually right. needs me to do B. And you, again, you can't assume that like, well, I'm being helpful. I'm doing this thing. But she's like, no, I can take care of that. I would much prefer you take care of this. Right. I think that is super powerful.
Here's an example of that she talks about. That's the most simple thing in the whole world, communication. So when I'm at the fire station, there was previously an expectation that I text her back or I call her back or we chat on the phone throughout the day. And it's just not realistic for that job. Like I'll be on an emergency scene and I'll get a text or a call. And then, you know, I've got a transport after that. So now I'm gone for 45 minutes and she's like, Hey, please answer me. And until we talked about it and established kind of ground rules for when it's appropriate to talk and when it's not, she knows now that like, we are going to talk every morning. So whether that's a quick text that says, hey, good morning, thinking of you, love you. And she responds to that. That's all she needs. And then at night at 10 p.m. or earlier, I'm going to call her and we're going to have a 15-minute, 20-minute conversation just to talk about our days, catch up, reconnect. And with those expectations in mind, I know that she is happier. And I know that I am too, because I'm not stressed out all day about trying to respond or trying to pick up the phone when she calls. If Shri calls me now during the day, I know something's going wrong. But you know, there's a problem at the house. Hopefully there hasn't been any sort of accident or anything like that, but I'm going to pick up if I absolutely have, or if I can, even if that's on like a medical call and I'm able to walk away for a second and be like, hey, is everything all right? Okay. Then I got to call you in a little bit. I'm on a call. And that's what it is. And since we've established those ground rules, I feel less stressed at work. She feels more secure and supported at home. And we have communicated that, and it's really worked out really well for us. But if you didn't know that, this is like having a mentor, right? You're going to go through that same process that I did for 10 years and fucking everything up before you learn the lesson. And what we're trying to do is just preload, proactive rather than reactive with our academy mates and their spouse in the same place, and have Shri give those talks to them. And even they do workbooks during this class, and they start to establish these expectations of each other. It's pretty cool.
All right, taking a break from the podcast to talk to you about the Train Hard app. If you're listening to this episode, it means you care about training, protecting, and providing, which means that you care about your health, your fitness, and becoming the most capable human being you can, just like me and Jason. Me and Jason use the Train Hard app for our training because there are three programs and it has something regardless of the season in your life you're in. If you have the time and energy and you're trying to be the fittest, strongest human being you can, we have four: strength and conditioning 5 days a week. If life is super busy right now and you need something that's just keeping your momentum from getting to zero, 20, 30 minutes max in the gym, in and out, it has a dumbbell version. If you don't have access to a bunch of equipment, we have the EMOM program. And if you're just trying to be the most jacked dad in the room, work on your body composition, we have the Flex program, which is exactly how I train and the program that I write. So if you haven't already, check the link in the podcast show notes, download the Train Hard app, train hard, but let's get back to the show.
Dude, I love that, Matt. Like, and what you're talking about, yeah, it's kind of unique to the fire service, but it's not like it's relatable to anybody, right? Like what you're talking about, like setting expectations, communicating. But the way you talked about it is powerful to me, because a lot of guys go off and they go to work. Yep. And, you know, for some of us, we work more at home. Some of us, we work more at the gym, wherever we work. And then we come home and maybe you're at the gym and you're at this place, you're going back and forth, blah, blah. Then you come home and you just need like a moment. But a lot of times you don't have that moment. And so I think guys can find a way to create that moment if they need it. Like one of the things I used to be really bad about is I used to come home from the gym and I'd be on the phone with like people wherever, right? And I would walk into the house, I'd be on the phone and I would kind of like tell the kids or whatever, they like, hey, 1 minute, I'm going to go finish my call. Instead now, if I'm on the phone when I arrive home, I'll just stay in the, like down the street, I'll finish the call and then I'll drive up. And that's just a small token where like I could take a minute in the car, take a deep breath, decompress, and then walk in and allow them to feel like they're my top priority. And for you, I know it's a little bit different because you're there, you're gone 48 hours, but it's a similar idea where you got to set up these kind of like guardrails so that you show up the best you can for those around you. And I think like your cell phone is a perfect example where like it brought down the anxiety for both of you because the expectation is not that you have to get back, because it's probably not good for you either when you're on a call and you're trying to focus on, you know, whatever you're doing and you're worried that you have to get back to Sheree's text, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that, man. I imagine that's making a huge impact on your department.
Yeah.
Jason's been doing, I don't know if you've seen this, Matt, but Jason's been doing these Train Hard Men's Club meetups. And I was able to go to one finally this past Saturday. I think he's up to like 26 straight weeks. And it's really cool, man. It's these group of men that get together and just do something hard in the morning. Like it's body weight. It's not like any crazy program thing. You know, Jason leads them. He's, you know, his usual charismatic self. I don't know what happened there. It's really cool. What I wanted to ask you is, because I spoke to one of these guys, we were doing some interview content with them, and he said something that, I mean, I've said it a bunch of times to Jay. He said that, you know, women make friends face-to-face, but men make friends shoulder to shoulder, saying that, you know, like relationships of like men to men is usually when you're like trying to accomplish something together. Mm. What is the brotherhood like at a firehouse, and how has that contributed maybe to the friends that you have now and you know, the level of connection that you get with the guys that you're working with and going on all these calls and spending 48 hours without, you know, necessarily getting a bunch of sleep?
Yeah, the best I can relate it to people so that they can understand it is, you know, I don't know how you say the word misogy. Is that how you say that?
I don't know how you pronounce it, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, misogy?
Yes. So a misogy, Jay, is it? It's basically like, I think it's a Japanese thing.
Yeah. It was in the Comfort Crisis book, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
So you basically pick one thing every year that you don't know whether or not you're going to be able to achieve it or not. And it's something that's grander than your wildest dreams. And you're going to just throw everything you have at it. And you may fail miserably, or you may finish the task. But it's something that you're challenging yourself to do, to suffer and learn how to suffer well. And I think this is going to sound terrible. There's going to be fewer applicants in the fire service because of this, but every set that I go to work feels like a misogy. Like, I feel like when I walk in and I start kind of getting checked in for the day, I'm getting prepared for a tough set of work. And the thing that gets me through it is the relationship that I have with the guys that I'm with. And we support each other through that. And it's so great to know that I don't have to have the answer or the solution to every problem, because I'm working with a crew of guys that have different backgrounds, different education levels in the fire service, and can really jump in and be the expert in every scenario. So whether that's a medical call and I'm relying on the paramedic in our crew to kind of take care of the situation, or whether that's an advanced extrication where we've got a victim trapped, and I call in the heavy rescue, those guys can take care of it. And what's really cool about that is you get to admit, hey, I am not good at this. This is not my strength, but it's this guy's. And this guy, I'm going to lean on him to be the best in this situation and allow that person to be successful. And when we come together like that, it's really, it's so team building. It makes me feel like I'm part of something much greater than just my little unit or myself. And that's what kind of keeps me coming back.
Yeah, the purpose.
Yeah, it's a purpose. You just feel like you're successful. When you're successful at something, you want more of it. You want more of it. And a lot of times the teamwork side of things, it's like playing on a basketball team, right? It's passing the ball to the guy that's going to make the shot, not making the big shot yourself. And that makes you feel successful. So I think the brotherhood is we suffer together and we also celebrate each other's successes. And that's in addition to all the station bullshit that goes on, that is just a ton of fun. And then support each other outside of work. You know, I know that Sheree can make a call to any of the guys that I work with or gals that I work with and get help at home if she needs it and I can't be there. And there's something really to that where it's like, Sheree, just call my buddy Rob. He's going to come over. He's going to help you. We'll get this taken care of. And to know that you have that support network while you're not at home is just, it's kind of like, you know, it kind of weighs on me kind of emotionally. It feels good.
Dude. Misoji. I'm now after we're done with this, I'm going to go look up Misoji, choosing one super hard thing a year. And I appreciate that, Matt. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. The comfort crisis, Jay, we've talked about that book before. He does a good job talking about it in the context of that entire book and how, you know, we should get uncomfortable every now and then, but I love the analogy there.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you something, Matt. So like, obviously we knew each other. I mean, well, we still get to see each other and throw down a little bit. You know what I'm saying? You also have the world's best tattoo on your back. So, you have the best, I mean, honestly, dude, your tattoos are the best, but anyways, back to where I really wanted to ask you about your training. So for training for the CrossFit Games training, you know, but now you do a lot of outdoor stuff. You probably do more outdoor stuff than almost anybody I know in terms of like, you are that guy, like you're rock climbing, you're skiing, you're cross country skiing, you're, you know, hunting, you're doing all these different things. So like, how has your fitness evolved for you? Because I know it's evolved for me as a husband, as a father, like what matters to me most. But I imagine to you, like you look at it in terms, we've talked about this a little bit, like you look in terms of like you're training for these seasons so you can go do these things outdoors. And I'm wondering like, how has that shifted for you? And then like, what's your favorite part of the hunting journey in particular is really interesting to me because you've gotten into that, like the last, like, I don't know, 5 years or so. Is that right?
Yeah. It's been 10 years now. 2013 was my first year doing it. Jay, I started doing the outdoor stuff very exclusively in like 2002. I lived in Winter Park, Colorado, which is a mountain town, at like 9,000 feet of elevation. And, you know, gym stuff wasn't really a thing in my life. It was mostly getting outside, mountain biking, skiing, traveling to go rock climbing, stuff like that. And that's how I met Cherie, was doing some mountain biking and stuff like that. And so that part of our relationship is a big part of our relationship. And when I started doing all the CrossFit stuff and when we owned a gym together, it really got interrupted, which was a great thing. Like, don't get me wrong. I don't regret that in any way, shape or form, but it really did kind of interrupt all the outdoor activities that we were capable of just because of time. And until 2013, I really did not participate in any outdoor sports, and it was weighing on both of us and our relationship pretty heavily. Hmm. And I found that like, if we could just get out once a week, starting in 2013, if we could just get out once a week, it kind of satisfied that needs of getting sunshine in our eyes and doing something fun. And we have been consistent at once or twice per week since 2013 of participating in that stuff. And of course that can be a bit heavier depending on the season. For example, archery season, I'm generally out there all of September for the entire month until I'm successful. And Cherie's been kind of going out there here and there with me as she can, and also just for her own enjoyment, and find that really enriches our lives. Is it as convenient as doing a, you know, 1 hour class or an hour and a half training session in a CrossFit gym or a garage gym? No, it's not as convenient. So there's that side of things that, like, I think most people, most listeners, they're like, yeah, but I can just go into the gym and get fit in 90 minutes. Why would I do all that? And until you incorporate that in your life, I can understand that kind of sentiment. But I know you're getting into it. I know that Rich is all in right now with outdoor stuff. And I think that if people just looked a little closer at how that outdoor time would enrich their lives a little bit outside of the gym, I think you'll see an improvement in your overall satisfaction and fitness. And for me, I look at it as my zone one and zone two days. So I do fit those in where I'm thinking about training. So yesterday, Cherie and I trained hard the first 2 days of the week and did the open workout on day one. And
yeah.
Some rowing at the end of the day. Yesterday, we did deadlifts, toes to bar, and wall walks. And then yesterday, it made sense to then do something that was long and slow. So I said to Cherie, do you want to go up to Berthoud Pass, do some backcountry skiing, And she's like, absolutely, I need a break. So that's kind of our zone one, zone two day. So now it's low output, long duration, and sunshine in our eyes, lots of fun. She dropped her wallet on the first lap as we're going up, and she realized it at the top. And we're like, okay, well, I guess we're going to do a second lap and figure out where your wallet is. And it's so fulfilling. It's just, it's one of those things where it's just like, when you spend time outside, there's a little bit of suffering involved and there's a little bit of uncertainty. You know, avalanches are always a concern out there, but when you get to make turns together and, or go hunting together and be successful, or, you know, go rock climbing and finish a route, it's just so much fun. You can feel successful at it. So I would encourage anybody that has an excuse, like I don't have the time or whatever, to make the time, figure it out and go out and do it, because it'll enrich your life.
I think that there's also this, like, you know, because to your point, sure, is it more convenient to go take a class, to go into the garage, get something in? And we all have to do that probably to hit the bulk of our, you know, fitness need. But I think that it's also like, you don't have to overcomplicate the outdoor thing, like, you know, throwing a ruck on and literally walking from like your doorstep 20 minutes out, 20 minutes back is a great way to get outdoors and get, you know, a lot of what you're getting. You don't have to go cross-country ski or have access to that to get a lot of these benefits. Because I think a lot of people see, you know, people that are very outdoorsy, and like the only thing you see, again, because people post the most exciting, most like whatever, is like, you know, going on a hunting trip or like doing the ski. But like getting outside is literally just getting outside. Like that's all it is.
It is. You're absolutely right. And you know, honestly, like the other stumbling block I think a lot of people have is they want to be an expert right away, whatever the thing is. And you got to be humble and enough to know that a beginner is going to be look like a beginner, going to make mistakes like a beginner, and going to crash and burn like a beginner. So if you accept that, eventually you'll be there. And like, I'm experiencing that right now with the tactical games.
Bro, the tactical games are so difficult. Like we talked about this at the Rogue Invitational, man. There is so much to learn, and the guys that are doing it right, they really understand it. And it's taken me a long time to even get to that point, you know?
Dude, just the firearms handling alone, like not making the mistakes about, you know, being consistent with where your muzzle is pointed, switching to safety, you know, all the time. Like those little things that to the expert is second nature. To us beginners, we mess that up constantly. Now you throw in the element of fitness into that, the firearms exercises, and it's just like, oh shit, there's just so much going on. I can't wrap my head around it and do this stuff right. I feel like such a beginner, but you know, that's part of the game. No matter what the game is like, I'm going to look like a fucking idiot because I have no skill sets here. None. So I'm just going to have to be okay with that and learn from somebody who's better at it than me.
Dude, Gabe and I were talking about this the other day on the show. He's getting his pilot's license. Did you actually get it then yet, Gabe?
No, I passed my written exam. I still have to do the practical check ride, which I'm getting close, not there yet.
But he's been doing this journey now for a while. And we were talking about like the first time he went up in the plane and the instructor's like, hey, you're going to land this in, you know, I don't know, 20 hours or whatever. I'm totally, you know, broad strokes here. But it's crazy because now Gabe has been up in the airplane, what, like 50 hours, Gabe? Is that what it's been?
Yeah, I'm like getting close to 50, but I've been up there solo. Like I've landed a plane. But yeah, the first time he was like, hey, just shadow the controls while I do this. I was like, I'm never going to do this. Like, this is impossible.
Right.
And then sure enough, you're not even 50 hours in and he's flying the plane by himself. And the reason why I brought that up is that whether it's tactical games, jujitsu, whatever, if you dedicate, you know, it's not as much time as you think to go from being like a really, really beginner to like, okay, I kind of understand what's going on. Obviously, you're not going to be an expert, but it doesn't take that many hours to just get past where most people's education is. But you just have to dedicate yourself and get past like that first little hurdle. And that first hurdle is the hardest, man, because it's, you feel like a fish out of water, you know?
Yeah. I honestly think a big part of that is if you're in your late 30s, 40s, or even 50s, and you're going to select something to do, choose something that like has a fast learning curve. Like piloting is not a fast learning curve. There's so much to it, right? Like Like, I think to be a commercial pilot, isn't it 1,000 hours?
Oh yeah. I mean, to actually get like hired by an airline, there's a lot that goes into it. I'm trying to get to the point where I can like, you know, rent a little Cessna and like, you know, take my family on like a 2-hour. Yeah. Like really cool ride. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's a reasonable expectation. For example, you know, if you're considering hunting, maybe the first place to go is either antelope hunting or whitetail hunting in the Midwest, as opposed to going to Alaska and expecting, you know, to shoot a moose, you know. So it's the expectations. Like, I've been trying to drag Jay out there with me for years now to go antelope hunting, because it's the perfect introduction to big game hunting in Colorado. It's a smaller animal. It's plains hunting generally. And we can go out there, be successful, and have some bro time and start to learn the whole process. And feeling successful at smaller tasks will lead into those bigger tasks. It's like, again, just like you said, shadowing, right? If you can shadow somebody or get mentored by somebody in any sort of sport or task or career, you're going to see improvements faster. And that's, I don't know, there's something to that kind of feeling successful kind of part of it. If you don't feel successful, you're not going to return to it.
Right. Right.
And Matt, you're doing your hunting exclusively, archery hunting?
No. I do both. I've come to like, rifle hunting a bit more. You can be more successful more often. There's more tags available, around the Western US for rifle hunters as far as seasons go. Archery is generally, you get September pretty much only, and therefore it limits where you can apply, because you're not going to be in New Mexico and Colorado at the same time.
Right. Whereas for sure. Right.
You could pull it off for the first week in November, the second week in November, the third week in November, in rifle seasons, because they're only a week long.
Well, I think that brings up an interesting point. You know, you're out in the woods and you're out like pretty often, and you had a pretty bad mountain biking accident. This is a curious question for you with your fire background and with how much you're outdoors. From a first aid perspective, you know, I was thinking about this, like the levels of being like, be able to protect for yourself and your family. I think at the very small, the baseline of the pyramid is like your general fitness, like mental and physical health. Like if you're not mentally and physically capable, doesn't matter the skill sets you have, because you can't apply them well if you can't breathe, right? So at the bottom of this pyramid is there. But then right above it, I'd actually put first aid, and then I'd probably put some combatives, and then maybe at the top you might put some firearms. But in terms of like levels of like actually having to utilize the skills, I feel like first aid is right above having the mental and physical fitness. And I don't know if you agree, but I'm curious, like from a first aid perspective, especially with your mountain biking accident, and like, because correct me if I'm wrong, you had a handlebar go through your thigh and it, right? And so what type of skill sets would you say someone can start developing today that you think would just play well in everyday life, especially with how much you're outdoors? Because, dude, you can't just call somebody and get them there. It's going to take for a while.
Right. So, outdoors is one thing. And just I would say, like, the biggest thing is where are most of the injuries and stuff like that happening? Generally, it's in a car or at home. So, like, having that basic first aid education of knowing how to apply pressure to a wound, how to assess somebody to see what's going on with them, understand why they're acting differently. That stuff, like a basic first aid class, we'll talk about that. And that's a great place to start as a baseline. Second on that is definitely CPR, because if you don't know what to do in that situation, you can't provide assistance. And the problem is that most people that are doing first aid classes are generally, you know, one person in a household. And unfortunately, what if it's that one person? The rest of the family doesn't have an idea of how to provide assistance. So I would say that like the baseline kind of education for a family should be CPR and first aid. And they do that together as a group, because if you can provide circulation to somebody that is currently down, you can save a life. And, you know, we see that all the time where we arrive on scene and the family member is doing high quality CPR because they went to a CPR class. They're going to keep that loved one alive for longer, or at the very least, the potential for them to walk away from an arrest, they have a higher likelihood. So those two things, I think, is a no-brainer. They're everywhere. They're easy to attend. You know, our fire department, for example, puts on, you know, education stuff for our citizens. It's always available, easy to do. But I think like having an understanding of higher level first aid is important as well. So like, you know, I basically don't go anywhere without a tourniquet. I also have a small first aid kit in every outdoor bag that I have, whether it's a hunting kit, whether it's a my ski kit, whether it's my climbing kit. I have a different first aid kit in each one of those bags, and I don't try to swap it. It's just committed to that. And then on the outside of that pocket, it says first aid written on the exterior of the bag, so that I know when it push comes to shove, I'm ready to reach for that when I need it. Because first aid happens quickly. You know, if somebody is bleeding heavily and you need to control that bleeding, you cannot go digging through a bag or in your car to try to find a first aid kit. You've got to apply pressure and with the other hand, reach and grab that thing and know exactly where it's at. So I think those are a few things that I would do. The tourniquet thing is vitally important. If you're involved in especially firearms based sport, I think, because the likelihood for accidents can be higher. So the ability and knowledge of how to apply a tourniquet and when to apply a tourniquet is extremely important. Carry one to two of those. And I carry a tourniquet when I'm skiing. I carry a tourniquet when I'm in the backcountry mountain biking. And, you know, it's because of what I ran into with Sheree in 2014. You know, if that was an open wound, I would not be sitting here with you guys today. But luckily that handlebar did not break the skin. It basically severed an artery in my leg, and there was so much blood accumulated that it self tamponaded that vessel. And I didn't, you know, bleed to death basically. But had we had a tourniquet, we could have applied it and kept the blood flow to a minimum into the compartment that it was doing it. So the other thing is a Garmin inReach, and there's a number of different brands. Like if
Garmin, like a GPS watch,
a Garmin inReach. So if you Google it, it's like a little device, and it allows you to flip open a little pocket and push SOS. And as long as you have a membership and you maintain that kind of subscription, when you push that SOS button, it begins the process of getting people to you in an emergency. Huh. And I've paid $12.95 for the last, I think, 11 years now. Yeah, 11 years since my accident for that subscription. And I've never used it, but it's one of those things that's always on whatever we're doing. Sheree had it on her pack yesterday while we were skiing, and it's ready to be used if we needed it. So for example, if I'm caught in an avalanche, she's going to flip that thing open and push SOS right away, first thing. So
I've never even heard of it before. I just looked it up. It looks like almost like a little walkie talkie almost. And
yep,
it must send out a signal to local, you know, emergency services, right? Is that basically what it does?
Yep. And it uses your GPS location to kind of let them know where you're at. So it gets the appropriate jurisdiction, agency from that jurisdiction responding to your location.
This stuff is always so interesting to me because we talk a lot about, you know, protecting and providing and, you know, fitness as a way to do that. But I think when it comes to these things, whether it's CPR or having something like this, especially if you're spending a bunch of time outdoors, it's so easy to be like, well, that seems excessive, or like, that'll never happen to me. Like, do I really need to do that? But I think that, you know, it's, you have to cover all your bases. I mean, you absolutely have to. And some of these things is just, you know, you're much more likely to need some of this stuff than, you know, for example, you know, having to use a firearm, right?
Yeah. Like Gabe, here's an example of that. Like when I go backcountry skiing, sometimes I'm with an individual that has way too much shit in their pack and it's slowing them down. And that could be true on hunting. That could be true on hiking, where like if you have a destination and if you can't reach that destination in the appropriate time frame, you've screwed the group. You've screwed the group because you're carrying too much shit to get to your destination. And now you put yourself in trouble to return back to the trailhead or whatever in a timeline that is appropriate. And that's putting the group at risk if they don't have the appropriate food or water with them. So you really have to pare down from individuals that know, that have been through this whole thing, on what is important to have and what is important to leave behind. Mm. Right. If I brought a fucking sleeping bag on every hunt I went on, I'm adding three pounds of weight that I have to carry with me for miles upon miles. So again, goes back to the mentor thing. If you have somebody show you, like, all right, this is what you need to carry with you, and this is what you don't need, please don't bring that shit. We can move fast, quick, and get an animal and carry it out very easily together in an appropriate time frame where we're not putting ourselves in danger.
I like the idea of the in-reach. That's pretty cool. I'm gonna look up that more. So with the, are you signed up for the Partner Tactical Games, right?
Luckily enough, I'm partnered with somebody that knows what they're doing.
Dude, so I'll follow up with you after this about that, because I was scheduled for one and then some stuff came up with Ava. And so I had to pivot away from that, but I definitely want to do one. I've been super fascinated with it. So I'm going to be training tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to that. Gabe, we're going to get Gabe eventually on the mats more and in tactical games. That's my goal.
No, 100%. I think it's unavoidable at this point, the amount of time I spend with this guy. I'm going to have to end up doing it.
Bro, the thing about that sport is, like, we talk about gear and like obstacles of getting started. The amount of gear that you need to get started is just insane. I've been accumulating this stuff for the last 2 months, and you got to have a budget. Like, that's not cheap.
Man, I started looking into it, and that was a big thing where I was like, all right, I'm going to hold off on this for now.
The battle belt alone.
This belt right here with this holster is like, I don't even know how expensive it is. It's just, and then don't get me started on the handgun and the rifle and the optic and the LVPO. And dude, you know, I'm working through, man, is I'm left eye dominant, but I'm right-handed, and it's causing me some issues. But for that, like, I am grateful to your point, like finding mentors, finding people around me that could kind of speed up my process, you know, because otherwise it would have taken me so much longer to get to where I'm even at today.
Yeah. And again, just, it's okay to be a beginner, to fail like a beginner, to look like a beginner. And if you have somebody to kind of show you the way, that's how you're going to be successful.
Matt, I am interested with you and Sheree. You know, you guys have had, it seems to me, I've spent a good amount of time with both of you guys.
Yep.
It seems like to me, you guys are really in tune with your relationship. Like, you're very intentional with your relationship, and this is just my opinion. I feel like every time I see you guys, there's something you guys are working on to like go from good to great. Like it's not that it's bad, like you're not in a bad spot, but you want it to get even better. And I think for that, man, it's something really admirable, I think, in your relationship, that like you're not going to accept good. Like, you want to see what is our potential in our relationship. And I'm wondering, like, is there anything as of lately, anything that, like, the takeaway I think you said about the communication, I think obviously the examples you're using with Sheree, I think, are great. But anything else come to mind in terms of your guys' relationship? Because I do feel like you can uniquely speak to this, because of every time I see you, there's something you guys are evolving from, which I think is really cool. Is there anything like you're evolving from right now that I think would be helpful for people listening? Because we're all about relationships here. Like, I want to be the best dad and husband I could be.
Well, dude, I think the big thing is that accepting the fact that we all are creatures of habit is the first step in acknowledging your shortcomings, because we as a human race find what's easiest and do that keeps us, maintains our survival, maintains our safety. And that, whether that safety is physical safety or emotional safety, it doesn't matter. We're going to do the thing that keeps us in our mind the safest. And for me, a lot of times that's something that makes me get defensive with Sheree, which I'm sure you guys have experienced in your relationships, potentially, you know, where they say something to you and it's like, why are you blaming me for that? Don't you see your part in that? Yeah. And that's a safety mechanism, I believe. And dropping your guard down to the one that you love and that loves you the most is, you would think it would come first nature. Like, it would be the thing that you do. But even still, you know, I think we've been married now for 18 years. Even now, I have to really slow things down. Generally say, I'm sorry, I wasn't, that reaction was a bad reaction, can we start over? But breaking habits is so hard to do once you've come of age, basically. And I, honestly, Jason, one of the things I'll tell you that's helped me the most is the use of psychedelics. to help break old habits and think in a new way, using different parts of my brain in a new way. And we both do that in a controlled, you know, situation with experts. And when we come back to it, back to our relationship, we try to make changes that we learn during those therapy sessions where it's like, okay, I see what I'm doing wrong. I see my part in that and I can be better. And you got to give me some freedom, some autonomy to try to make these changes and fail. And I'm going to do my best to be a better person. And I think it will make us better in the long run. And I think that's one of the biggest changes over the last few years that we have made that is really helping us and break old habits.
Man, that's super interesting. And I'm a little bummed we're getting to the end of our hour because there's so much we can dive into there. I was just listening to
a whole podcast on that. Yeah.
Well, I was just listening to another podcast. It's funny on the timing where and now I'm forgetting what the podcast was, but they brought up that a bunch of people with, you know, different types of addictions, like the help that they got with psychedelics on breaking something that, you know, nothing else was seemingly breaking habit-wise. And obviously that's an extreme example of, you know, just kind of the daily habits that maybe, you know, make you make it difficult to have a good relationship with your partner. But so it's funny that you mentioned that because they were mentioning it in that respect. But that's super interesting, man.
Man, yeah. I'll tell you what, I could see this as being a solution to any sort of repetitive habit. So for example, like I don't have a problem with food, but I could imagine that if an individual that has a longstanding problem with food addiction went to a therapy
session. Too much or too little, probably.
Exactly. And yeah, they did a series of psychedelic sessions with a therapist. And you are, when you're on those drugs, you are readily aware of what the issue is. And it is facing you fucking right in front of your face. Like this is your problem right now. And you are keenly aware of it. And while your brain is plastic for those hours afterwards, you can really start to form new habits. And that's something that can be done, I feel like, for any habit, whether it's drugs, whether it's food, alcohol, whether it's treating your spouse incorrectly. Our brains are, they're creatures of habit. And if we can just break those habits, it's there's a lot available there.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about this pretty lengthy. And I think, like I said, I think we could do a whole episode on just psychedelics and the way that you could use it from microdosing to full like experiences with a therapist and whatnot. But when we spoke about it, you didn't use the term, or maybe I didn't pick up on the term, like habit, right? This is your habit. This is like something you've been ingrained for so long. And the psychedelics have a way to break down old habits. I think that's a really good way for like, at least me to take my takeaway. And, yeah. But I feel like there's so much we could dive into with this.
Really? Yeah. There is. Yep. Man. It's like a Christmas tree. It's like a Christmas tree, right? Like if you only use one strand of the Christmas tree lights, that's what's going to be used. And that's what's going to light up your tree. But like when you use the psychedelics, it lights up the whole tree. And then, you know, you can see the tree as it's supposed to be, how it's supposed to look. And when you're aware of it like that, you're like, I always want to see the tree fully lit. And you can make changes during those times. And it's really helped Sri and I. We both have gone through processes together, and it's really, it's not for everybody. I'll say that. It's definitely, it's hard. It's hard. It's not something that you could just do and, oh, I'm better. No, it's hard fucking work. And that's one thing, like, you know, just as well as I do, train fucking hard. I don't just train hard in the gym. I don't just train hard at my job. I train hard at home with my wife. Like we are trying to get better together. And that does not make, it's not easy all the time, but in the long run, we're getting, it's like an investment.
Man, this is a world I don't know much about, but I appreciate you mentioning that as we kind of close it up, in that it's also not a magic pill, right? It's also not like you're going to go do this and it doesn't require anything on your part. It's just that is going to solve all the issues. Like all of these things give you the opportunity to fix the problems if you put the work in, whatever it is, fitness, anything, right? Matt, there's two questions that we want to end on with our guests. One, and I know that Jason really loves this question. I love it too. Is there anything that you were like 100% convinced of a year ago that you have changed your mind on or you're not convinced of anymore?
Convinced of. That's good. Yeah, I guess, you know, I think it may not be a year, but, and this is going to probably hit, I'm trying to contextualize this for your listeners, but that, ready for this? I'm sorry. Yeah. CrossFit is not a complete program.
Oh, all right.
It is an incomplete program. And the way that it's being done in most affiliates is an incomplete program. Is it good for general fitness? Yes, it's good for general fitness. Is it something that prepares you for any and everything in life? Nope. Unfortunately, Jay, you and I probably experience this more than most. We have trained ourselves to be anaerobic athletes, and our bodies switch over to anaerobic glycolysis even when we're trying to do aerobic efforts. And we talked about the Masoji stuff. I learned that on a Masoji in 2015 with a group of people, and I was the anchor. Even though I was the fittest of my entire life, I was the anchor because I could not go in the long distances. So,
man, we're gonna have to book another podcast just to dive into that further. Yeah. But I love it. No, I love these conversations, man. No, that's
psychedelics, awesome. and is it a full program, dude? That's it.
There you go. Put it on the calendar.
That's Matt Chan episode 2 coming up in a couple of months.
and then the question that I have, because I'm always looking for a good book recommendation, anything that you've read recently or you're reading now that you're absolutely loving?
Oh, man. I just got done. Not really, honestly. I just got done with, like I told you guys, the lieutenant testing. So I've had my nose buried into some IFSTA books. But on the list is Jordan Peterson's book. I haven't downloaded. I forget which one it was, but... that's next up is jumping into that. But I'm lucky. I have a voracious book consumer with me in the house at all times, and she loves to fill me in on what books she's either read or listened to recently. So they're always like self-help related. So I feel like I'm constantly getting peppered with self-help. So that satisfies my need.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. Matt, we really appreciate your time. And as we said in the intro, we'll put the links to different things you have going on. You got a lot of different things going on, but I know that, you know, you have your online programming. You obviously are dedicated to the craft for firefighters, which is beautiful, and people can go check you out on Instagram and whatnot. We'll link it all in the podcast show notes, but I just want to say thank you so much for your time. I think this is just part one of several, because I feel like we could really dive deeper into some of the stuff you're talking about, which I think is going to be really rewarding for everybody listening. So just want to say thanks, brother. I really appreciate you.
Appreciate you too.